Hey guys, you're listening to the most captivating podcast in iTunes. That's right, the Elite Man Podcast, where we turn average men into elite men every day. We interview the very best experts from the lifestyle, health, fitness, social, and even entrepreneurial worlds. And with their help, we give you some of the best advice on the planet. Subscribe now if you haven't already and enjoy the show. And oh yeah, if you really enjoy it, leave us a review. On today's episode, episode number 131, entitled How Stem Cells Work, Everything You Need to Know About These Powerful Healing Tools, I chat with Eric Marola. Eric Marola is an international award-winning documentary filmmaker, and in today's episode, Eric talks about the incredible power of stem cells and teaches you everything you need to know about how they work, how to get treatment using them, and what they can do for your health right now. Eric shares his story of creating the God Cells documentary and his own personal experience using fetal stem cells in the Ukraine. If you're wondering what stem cells are, how exactly they work, and what they could potentially do for your health, check this episode out now. You are going to love it. Hey guys, go to EliteLifeNutrition.com right now to get ready for the launch of our very own natural and organic supplement line. Elite Life Nutrition is the official supplement brand for the Elite Man Podcast, and we're finally coming out with our very own vitamins, minerals, herbs, and supplements to help you become as healthy as possible. We're just about ready to finally unroll our first products in a couple of weeks. I know I mentioned this a few weeks back, and there was a slight delay in the manufacturing, but we're finally ready. And if you want to know exactly how to get your hands on them, sign up for our email newsletter right now. These will be the highest quality and purest supplements on the market. EliteLifeNutrition.com. All right, guys, we're live. It's Justin Stenstrom from EliteManMagazine.com, and my guest today is Eric Marola from EricMarola.com. Eric, thanks so much for coming on the show, man. I really appreciate it.
Thanks. My pleasure.
Eric, for those who aren't as familiar with your work, I know I mentioned it a minute ago in the intro, but for those who aren't as familiar with kind of what you do, can you just give us kind of a little snippet, a little background into what it is you do, what you do now, and kind of how you got into that?
Yeah. You know, I started out working in advertising in New York City on Madison Avenue. I did a lot of, you know, big primetime ads. I even did a lot of ads for the pharmaceutical industry. It sort of, I don't know, I kind of got tired of sort of selling stuff to people. I kind of took a whole new direction and decided to produce content that, you know, sought truth, you know, if you would. And I don't know how I kind of fell into the whole science and medical world. It always has been an interest of mine, but it wasn't like a plan. But essentially, you know, I started making documentary films with my first one being about a really innovative cancer doctor named Dr. Stanislaw Brzezinski, who has a cancer treatment that he invented and he patented, and is the first one, really the first person in history as a scientist to enter FDA clinical testing, where you're basically competing with these billion-dollar companies. So it just fascinated me, you know, and he was also kind of funded by the National Cancer Institute when he first got started in the 70s. The quick science behind it is he got his medical degree, he's getting his PhD in biochemistry, and he found a strain of peptides in human blood and human urine that had never been discovered before. But I'll get into details on that later. But I released that. It did really well. Got it on Netflix. And ended up getting seen by millions of people. It kind of became a viral thing. It translated in a bunch of languages. I ended up doing a sequel. I did a third one about this whistleblower story about a guy who worked at Sloan Kettering Cancer Center, and they were testing a substance no one ever thought would work. It was just like the biggest quack substance of the country, and it ended up stopping cancer 80% of the time, so they had to cover it up. And my most recent one is about the world of stem cells, specifically fetal stem cells. So, and all of my films are available on Amazon Prime Video right now.
And that's kind of what I want to primarily focus on too, by the way, today, is the God Cells, the latest documentary that came out about fetal stem cells. But before we kind of dive into some of the details on stem cells, I mean, because you're kind of the go-to guy, in my opinion, on everything stem cell related. We had a conversation actually before and just talked for like an hour all about stem cells, and I was fascinated by the potential for it and actually what they can do already now. And you've actually gone yourself and done the stem cell treatments. But real quickly, before we dive into that, the Dr. – no, not the Brzezinski, the other –
documentary. Was that about Laetril, the one that you said had 80% stopping the cancer?
That is correct. Yeah, my film Second Opinion, Laetril at Sloan Kettering on Amazon Prime. Yeah, okay. This guy that the movie's about, he wrote a book called The Cancer Industry, which was he wrote a book about his experience, which was what this film is based upon. Of course, he's in it. It was that book that got me into this whole world, this guy named Ralph Moss, who wrote the book about his whistleblowing experience at Sloan Kettering. He was sort of like the Edward Snowden of the cancer world back in the day. But the quick capsule, idea about this whole story was the substance called Laetril or amygdalin, which is derived of all things from apricot pits. Like this, the substance is sort of a industrial, throwaway byproduct of the, California's apricot canning industry. It's like the stuff is everywhere. And some clever person years ago figured out that it might help against cancer. So all these people were going to Tijuana to get it. At the time in the 70s when, Nixon declared the war on cancer, nearly 100,000 people were going to Tijuana to get it. It was all over the news at the time. So since the war on cancer was enacted, they asked the top cancer center in the country, Sloan Kettering, to test this thing. And they actually got one of their oldest scientists who had been there for 60 years, who was an original co-founder of chemotherapy itself. He pioneered the idea of using mice to test new chemotherapeutic agents. Couldn't have been a better person to test this so-called quack therapy. But yeah, sure enough, to their surprise, in every double-blind mouse study for 5 years, and every different type of mouse model they could come up with that was available, it stopped the spread of cancer 80% of the time, 80. And they even did preventative testing where they had these mice that are bred to develop cancer naturally, and 80% of the time the mice never even got cancer compared to the placebo or saline group. These were double-blind. People didn't even know who was getting what. The top of scientific standards of testing. So they, were stuck, and the heads of Sloan Kettering wanted to move forward with clinical testing in humans. The federal government would not let them. On two separate occasions, the Food and Drug Administration and the National Cancer Institute told them they had to stop and cover this up. And Ralph Moss was just a non-scientific writer. He had his PhD in classics from Stanford. I mean, he studied Greek, and he was asked to basically write these reports that he knew were lies because he was actually friends with the scientist who was making the testing. He just couldn't take it. He tried to leak the documents for a while because he wanted to keep his job, like most people, which is why, as he said, this is why people probably leak documents all the time. And it didn't work. No one would take it seriously, even though there were original lab reports. So he just finally just had enough and blew the whistle on the whole thing by having a big press conference. And I've got the audio of the press conference in the movie. And it was a big defining moment for him. And then, of course, him writing the book about his experience that eventually got to me, decades later, got me into this whole world and encouraged me inspired me to go down the road I did. And in that book, The Cancer Industry, not only is it about the story, but I read a reissued book because it was very popular and they kept reissuing it. And there was a tiny chapter on this guy, Dr. Brzezinski, who was my first movie. So it all kind of comes around full circle. Okay. With this one story. Yeah.
That's fascinating, man. And yeah, we've had guys like Ty Ballinger on the show before, who I know you're familiar with, who talks about all sorts of natural treatments. And, he mentioned, I believe, Brzezinski at one point, and especially the Laetril. And, I mean, it's just fascinating. To me, it's mind-blowing that there's something that effective out there. It's 80% effective, and yet the FDA, the regulations, the government regulations, all that stuff is basically suppressing it and hiding it so that it can't hit the general public. Like, why is that? Like, where's that coming from, and what's the reasoning behind that?
Yeah, I'll tell you. It's interesting. I'm very much a pragmatic person when it comes to this. I look at this, as responsibly as I can. I don't believe in a lot of the theories, they're trying to depopulate the planet and blah, blah, blah. This is all economical and market related. There's two things I'll give you an example. And all of these also relate to the stem cell issue, which I'll be sure to talk about again. But something happened to me when I finished the first Brzezinski movie. At the end of 2009, a guy that worked for Brzezinski, who was his head of finance, so he was in charge of raising $200 million to get his – he got permission to do phase 3 final randomized studies for his treatment. It ended up never happening because no hospital would allow this to be done on their property. But it ties right into the story. So this guy was old college buddies with David Axelrod, the chief election architect for President Obama and was President Obama's chief of staff for much of his term. And Axelrod, he said to me, I'm going to meet Axelrod in D.C. Do you send me your movie in any form that it's in? Of course, I got very excited. You know, what an opportunity. Maybe a little naive on my part. But he showed it to Axelrod. He dropped it off after he had lunch with him in D.C. A couple weeks later, he had lunch with him again. And Axelrod basically said to him, this is obviously very important, but it's just too big. He kept repeating, it's too big. Then he said, maybe in 10 years, you know, we can face this issue, meaning the release of Brzezinski's invention to the public, but not right now. And then, this was in 2009, just a year or so before the banks had just essentially failed, and we saw how that affected our economy. He basically said that if we release this thing, it could really be detrimental to the economy. So there you go, from the horse's mouth, a very, you know, pragmatic, you know, realistic viewpoint in the sense of protecting our economy and protecting the status quo. And it's unfortunately sometimes protecting the public, if it can affect the economy, that is not something that is allowed, unfortunately. And if you look at the numbers, it makes sense. So right now, if you look, there's 15 million people in the United States right now living with cancer. Each patient on average contributes, and I'm going to, this is a low ball, about $250,000. All right. I base this number on patients that I've known, family members, et cetera. This is at least $250,000. So 15 million people in the U.S., let's just pretend you had something that everybody that has cancer would want, whether it be a magic bullet cure or not. At a $250,000 price tag times 15 million, that will break your calculator. It's almost $4 trillion. So that is like bigger than a lot of the GDPs of a lot of countries. And you also, there's also a verifiable stat that 1.5% of the world's gross domestic product is in cancer therapy. 1.5%. That's massive. And then so let's say you had something that would replace it all. Like in my opinion, like something like Brzezinski or even Laetrile, frankly, not a replacement so much as a first line of defense with somebody. The first line, most people are terrified of chemo and radiation and even surgery. But if you were given an option of something that has a better track record in clinical trials, et cetera, and of course is safer and will not make your hair fall out and make you, and you know, potentially threaten your life, most everyone reasonable, anybody in any way, is going to go for those therapies. So what's going to happen to the 500 pharmaceutical companies around the world that are in the business of treating cancer if there's one or two treatments that everybody's going to go to first? So that's the problem. That's a really big problem, unfortunately. And then, of course, lastly, you also have the bureaucratic side of it. Like, if you look at the current FDA commissioner who's sitting there now, before he was FDA commissioner, he made $500,000 as a pharmaceutical consultant, okay, just a couple years before becoming commissioner. Now, before he was a pharmaceutical consultant, guess what? He was deputy commissioner of the Food and Drug Administration. So there's this incestuous revolving door there to protect this industry. So, and that is one of the reasons why, you know, we see what's going on. You know, it's just that simple. It's just business. Yeah.
Wow. Talk about a conflict of interest, huh?
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, that is insane.
Yeah.
Holy crap.
Yeah.
That's crazy. So, I mean, the first reason makes sense. I mean, that, like, on a practical standpoint, you can understand why somebody in the higher, you know, highest parts of the government would be like, yeah, this could, you know, literally collapse our economy or whatever. Mm-hmm. As shitty as that is, and it, you know, it's totally shitty because, I mean, look mm-hmm. how many millions of people suffer from cancer and die every year. That actually, if, you know, I don't know if it's, I don't even know if that's possible, if it would even happen or whatever. I think they should still go for, obviously I'm doing this podcast because I believe in this kind of stuff. I believe they should go forward with it, do all the FDA testing, get it out there. But something like that, if you think about it in terms of, like, you know, David Axelrod, I guess, you know, that kind of makes a little more sense than the second reason, having the guy who was paid off by, even paid $500,000 a couple years before, and now he's the head of the FDA. I mean, that just totally blows my mind that you have some guy who's literally in the pockets of the people in the pharmaceutical industry now in charge of running, in control of basically who gets the money and who's going to be shut down and, you know, what studies are going to be funded and what's not going to be. I mean, that's just crazy.
Yep, I know. But you got to think about it from a business standpoint. If you want to conquer your industry, the first thing you got to do is take over the group that regulates you, you know, and they've done that. You know, it's interesting. I got a glimmer of possible good news on this. This is just August 3rd, yesterday. The Senate passed what's called a right to try bill. This still has to make it past the House, but it basically allows terminally ill patients to have more freedom in what they can choose without the FDA standing in their way. So, like, it's not like the people aren't trying to fight back. They're not completely unaware of this, you know, on the inside. But anyway, it's just a random piece of recent news that just happened that might change the landscape a little bit. But yeah, no, I mean, this has been going on for, you know, a long time. You know, back in the early 90s, one of the first things they did, which is quite, you know, genius, it's terribly diabolical, but it's really smart, is they passed what's called the Drug User Fee Act. They hid the basically the FDA and all the pharma lobbyists, you know, created this illusion. And some of it's true, but that's all of this is all about half truths anyway. But created this illusion that the FDA is underfunded and they can't get drugs to the market fast enough. So what they did was they created what's called a Drug User Fee Act, and it's been renewed every year, where every new drug that wants to be gone through clinical testing at the FDA is forced to pay what's called a user fee. So they're forced to pay, I think now it's up to almost $2 million per new drug. So what that does, though, so each pharmaceutical company has to pay the FDA $2 million to review their drug. But what that does is, since the inception in the early 90s, now well over 50% of the drug evaluation money comes from pharma now, not from the taxpayer. So just you can just imagine, it's just like fox in the chicken coop at this point. So the very people that are trying to get your drug approved are relying upon the people that are telling you, please approve my drug financially, as opposed to it being a third party, unbiased, you know, institution. It's no longer that. It literally has been purchased by the industry, the FDA, on the drug evaluation side. So you have that problem as well. It's
I mean, just how much money do you actually need? I mean, and look at all these drugs too. I mean, not even drugs, all these natural treatments, they're virtually free. Like all these people coming up with these things and, you know, finding all these natural ways to reverse these different types of diseases and cancers and all this other stuff. They're basically from like natural, you know, nutrients or, you know, the apricot seeds, things like that. Like, I mean, they don't have all these massive companies behind them creating all these new drugs. They don't have this money to go up and pay that fee to basically get set up and, like, you know, play ball. I mean, it's ridiculous.
Right.
It's so not fair in that sense.
And that's a good point, because that's something else that the user fee did, is that it doesn't allow the little guy, the little innovator, to play ball. Because how are they going to come up with $2 million to play ball? And back before that, you could submit an application to the FDA like anybody else. Whether or not you get accepted is a whole other thing. But now you got to have $2 million just to get in the door. It's kind of like going to the casino. You want to go to the $50,000 room. You know, you're not going to be able to go in there, the average person. You know, it's like that now. Mm-hmm. So, yeah.
Wow, crazy, man. We'll actually touch back on this because it relates to stem cells as well. And I know the FDA is, you know, big on blocking that, especially in the United States. But let's switch gears and dive into the current project you're working on now, the documentary you just wrapped up, The God Cells, which I'm fascinated more than anything in. And let's kind of break it down for us. I know there's a lot of information on stem cells. We'll keep it simple. What's the types of stem cells out there that they use right now, and kind of what does each one of them do?
Sure. So most people, stem cells, the whole world of stem cells can be so confusing to the average person. People hear the word stem cells and they just sort of think it's all the same, when nothing could be farther from the truth. So I'll sort of break it down, because I'm sure like many people listening go, I know, I have an uncle, or I heard that this basketball player or whoever got stem cell therapy, but it's really important to understand like what kind of stem cell therapy they got. For example, the first stem cell therapy ever really known was the bone marrow transplant. That is theoretically a stem cell procedure. And that's been around since, for decades. So, you know, you wouldn't say, oh, this person had stem cell therapy. You said they had a bone marrow transplant. So it's very confusing. So there's hundreds of clinics all around the United States now that do what's called autologous, I can never pronounce that properly, but it's the adult stem cell. And what they are doing is they're taking the cell from your fat or your bone marrow as an adult, whether you're a child or a grown person. And they essentially, there's ways to process this cell and give it back to the adult and hopes that that cell will end up rejuvenating the body more than it would normally just by living inside of you. So, for example, if you get a cut or an injury or a broken bone, we have stem cells in us that go to the rescue and do that. So the principle of stem cell therapy is to harness that idea that happens naturally and magnify it to the nth degree. That's sort of the idea behind stem cells in general. Mm-hmm. But the interesting thing, you know, with adult stem cells, it's very easy, and it's one of the ones that are fairly legal. The FDA doesn't really know how to really restrict it. We're trying not to get too down the rabbit hole here, but basically, what's interesting about adult stem cells is that, okay, you're getting a quote stem cell that's kind of like this blank slate cell that you're taking out of your body, processing it, and giving it back to the body in hopes that it becomes, say, a brain cell or a heart cell or a kidney cell or whatever cell in your body or a cartilage cell that might need repair. And so that's that. You have umbilical cord stem cells, which are harvested at birth. These are merely blood cells. The interesting thing, too, about adult and umbilical is that it has to be given back to that individual. It has to be a perfect genetic match. You can't take an adult stem cell from you and give it to me, per se. At least the technology isn't really there yet. The same with umbilical. If you have a child and you're getting your umbilical cord saved for the child, it's really only has very limited uses. Like things like leukemia and things like that, it's going to be very beneficial. But one thing I'll just warn everybody is that you're not going to have access to this without FDA approval. One of the patients in my movie whose kid had autism, they tried to have access to the umbilical cord cells, and the FDA wouldn't let them have access to it. So there's a problem there. So it's a little bit of a kind of cart before the horse scenario with umbilical. And you have something called embryonic stem cell and fetal. The two of them are very, very different. Embryonic stem cells, which I'm sure we hear a lot about, there's a lot of debate about it on the news. People confuse it with fetal, but an embryonic stem cell is how it sounds. It's from an embryo. You grow it by fertilizing an egg in a petri dish in a laboratory, and it's harvested around 5 days, within 5 days. These, while there's a lot of buzz around them, they're highly dangerous. The literature is filled with warnings about this. They can cause non-cancerous tumors called teratomas, and all these disgusting things can grow inside of you because they're so immature and so young and so volatile, if you would, that they could become just about anything. So there really hasn't been a lot of progress with embryonic. There's still a lot of experimentation, but time and again, it's proved more dangerous than efficacious. And then we have fetal. Fetal is when you literally are harvesting stem cells from an aborted fetus, from an abortion, like the most controversial, you know, route you could possibly think of. So in this, that's what my movie was about. Because by speaking to some of the top stem cell experts in the country, in the world, and doing all the years of research to go into this, fetal, what's so brilliant about it is that it's usually harvested at the end of the first trimester. So the whole thing is harvested. All the stem cells from the brain and the heart and the liver, the lungs, the pancreas, you know, all of the cartilage, all of it is harvested, tested for everything under the sun, for every bacteria or virus you can think of. They're also tested to make sure they proliferate and they're healthy, and they can, once injected, they will continue moving. What's fascinating, not only is it sort of like the Ferrari stem cell versus the horse and carriage of the rest, because the reason being is that what adult stem cells say, you're hoping, let's say you have an immunological problem or a cartilage problem or whatever, you're hoping that that cell will mature into the type of cell in your body that needs repair. But with fetal, you're already halfway to the finish line because you're getting the brain cells and the heart cells and the cartilage cells and the liver cells and the kidney cells, et cetera, that already know what they are. And when they're in your body, they know where to seek out and repair. They're already halfway there, if that makes sense. But here's the big fascinating mind-blower, almost science fiction part of it all. For some reason, at the end of the first trimester, there's no need for a genetic match, which is just a mind-blower. So you're basically getting, like in my case, The equivalent, gosh, of like four or five different harvests that are, again, tested and given to a human being like me to go in and repair your body. So, and there's been no data of any rejection. There's been no documentation of any reason to, like, say, suppress the immune system, which is in the case of bone marrow transplantation. They suppress your immune system to allow the stem cells to take. For some reason, these cells don't require any of those things. and the one of the things, ways to back it up, one thing the scientific community does agree upon in this world is that hundreds of women have donated their bodies to science, right? And many of them have had children. It has been documented for decades that, like, say, a woman who had given birth to a boy, male chromosomes have been found in the hearts and the brains of these women, which is impossible without having given birth to a boy. What it means is that these cells during pregnancy leave the womb and start repairing and regenerating the mother during pregnancy. And while you might think, okay, well, it's more of a genetic match, no, it's not, because while it might be partially genetically related to the mother, there's no guarantee that this son or daughter that's given birth by this woman can be a donor for their kidney transplant or even have the same blood type. So that's one reason. That's like one clue for the scientific community and the inventors of this technology to realize, like, wow, is this possible to actually harness this? So that's what has been done, and that's what my movie is about. There's only one place on planet Earth where it's actually physically legal, and that's the country of Ukraine. I spent a lot of time there as well documenting the story.
Yeah, go ahead, man.
Yeah, I was going to say, of course, I talked about myself. I'm not really ill, but yeah, it's used to treat a host of immunological and neurological diseases, everything from, you know, Crohn's disease to ulcerative colitis to think people with Parkinson's, autism, et cetera. Yeah.
Cool, man. We'll touch upon some of the things it's treated so far and what the potentials are in a few. Let's dive into some kind of specifics now. How are the stem cells injected? Like, when you went, let's talk about your experience. When you went over there, what's the place called in Ukraine, by the way?
Sure, it's called EMCELL, E-M-C-E-L-L. And to make it, and it that stands for embryonic cell. Not to make matters more confusing, you just heard me talk about embryonic versus fetal.
Yeah.
In many cultures, especially in that culture, and I think even in much of Asia, there's literally no definition. There's no dictionary word for fetal. So it all falls under embryonic. Which makes the whole world more confusing. But anyway, yes, it's called EMCELL. They're the ones that originally pioneered this. They've been working on it for decades, but they finally got it approved within the Ukraine Ministry of Health and got it to the market, if you would. Got their clinic established in the early 90s. And part of the reason this was done was because when Chernobyl happened in that region, all the health regulations were loosened up to deal with this catastrophe, and they saw it as their way in. And coincidentally enough, the very first patient they ever treated was a 12-year-old who had aplastic anemia, which is bone marrow failure. And he got this because his parents were buying milk from a radiated farm due to Chernobyl. And so he had complete bone marrow destroyed. And he was waiting on a blood transfusion and a potential bone marrow transplant. And the inventors of this technology found out about this kid. They tracked him down at a hospital in ICU in Kyiv, Ukraine. They talked to the parents, and they convinced the parents to let them treat this kid. And after two rounds of fetal stem cells, there was no other treatment given to this child. It completely cures aplastic anemia. And I have him in the movie. I have him on Skype. So this stuff is able to cure bone marrow failure. So just imagine what else it can do. So anyway, that's kind of the quick background of who these people are and who I was treated by.
Cool.
But essentially, yeah, I mean, I met all these, not only do they treat a lot of sick people, but there's a lot of like Hollywood folk, heads of state around the world, a lot of wealthy people that are kind of on the cutting edge of like this whole biohacking world, especially, get this therapy just for anti-aging, longevity, kind of like taking your car in for a tune-up. And that's what I did. And I honestly, I kind of started getting jealous by meeting all these people and along this way, and I just said, I need this therapy myself. I'm just as busy as these people are. I just had this bright idea. Why don't I put myself in the darn movie getting this therapy? So that's, you know, it's kind of fun to do. So,
Yeah, the movie's awesome, by the way. I finally got a chance to watch it all, and it's just really fascinating. Just like, you know, just talking to you right now, man, I'm totally enthralled by all this information, and anyone who's listening now has to check out the movie. It's really that good. So talk about the experience, Eric. When you went in there, like, how does it work? What is, you know, what kind of things, what kind of testing are they doing? How does the injection of the stem cells work? And what can you kind of expect for anyone listening who may be thinking about, you know, potentially doing this one day?
Sure. That's important to note. No different than how not all stem cells are created equal. Not all fecal stem cell providers are either. There are a lot of kind of wannabes. There's some in Tijuana and some other parts of the world. At MSL specifically, and I've been to some of the other ones, and I can show this in the movie. What they do, which is unlike everyone else, is that you're there for like 3 days, sometimes 2 days, sometimes 3 days, depending on your ailment or your reason for being there. Out of the gate, you fast the night before. They do a huge blood panel, and all this stuff is tested on site. Far beyond what your average physical blood panel is in the United States. They also test your urine. They give you a full ultrasound to check out all of your organs and your thyroid and your lymph nodes and all that stuff as well to see if there's any other thing going on with you that you may not be aware of. And so based on that, they design like a protocol just for you. Now, everybody gets the same cells, no matter what. But it's just the amount of cells here or there and the way they space them out, and sometimes even where they're injected depends on your specific diagnosis. So it's like, you know, personalized medicine to the utmost here. So for me, I have like a little bit of high cholesterol. There's a couple little things that were out of range blood-wise, but nothing clinically dangerous. And by the way, everything normalized, you know, a few months later. But so I designed the protocol around that. They give you like an IV of sometimes amino acids or other vitamins, things to kind of get your body ready for the cells. But the sort of immune-based cells, what I mean by that is like the liver and the organ, many of the organ-based cells. The liver cells are very important because at the time of gestation or the time of harvest, the bone marrow in the human is not been formed yet. And the liver cells or the cells in the liver is what eventually becomes the body's bone marrow, which of course, again, will explain why this kid with a plastic anemia did so well on these cells. So they were given to me in an IV form that was like injected over, I guess, nearly an hour time, like a slow drip. The sort of more nervous system related cells and a lot of other cells in that sort of world, and also cells that help with sexual functions, fertility, and libido. My libido exploded once these things kicked in as well. They're injected into the fat around your belly. And the reason for that is, and there's multiple injections, like I think more than a dozen over the course of a few days, is because your fat holds some of the most stable body temperature. And based on their data and their research, they found that the cells release slower and have a better chance of survival inside of you in that area of your body versus going right into your bloodstream, like the liver cells were done and those some other organ cells. So, yeah, I mean, and they also offer things like massage for circulation and hyperbaric oxygen as well to further kind of, you know, stimulate, you know, these cells grafting and staying in your system. And it sounds really simple, but it kind of is. But you're there from 4 to 6 hours, and the injections are kind of broken up throughout the day, you're going through again oxygen and maybe a massage as well. Any clinical experience anywhere else, just you're just there for 4 to 6 hours a day for 2 to 3 days, you know, versus, you know. So yeah.
Mm-hmm. Are all the stem cells injected into the belly fat typically, or is there any other regions that they might be injected into?
Sure. For me, the more immune-based cells were injected into my veins and then the other cells into my belly fat. But no, my father had the therapy, and he had it just the way I explained it. But he has type 2 diabetes, he had really bad knees. And like many people in his age, they actually, because they harvest everything, they harvest the cartilage cells of the fetus, and they will inject it locally directly into your knees. And for him, it never regrows cartilage, but what it does do, it takes whatever cartilage is left that might be dry and brittle and fragile, and it regenerates it and rejuvenates it to make it like youthful and flexible again. And my father was just like hobbling around. You know, he didn't need a cane or anything. It wasn't that bad, but you know, just climbing stairs, walking long distances was not easy for him. It was always painful. And now once they kicked in, his knees are doing fantastic. Like he even my parents were married when they were younger, they would like win dance contests. So he said he actually went out dancing, you know, not too long ago. So to answer your question, yes, they do it locally. I think they're also exploring and experimenting with doing it near the eyes for macular degeneration, which is a common eye thing for older people. You know, yeah, they will do local specialized injections if needed. Yeah. In fact, I plan on going back again this fall, and I actually hurt my Achilles heel exercising. And it's going to be interesting if I'm going to film it and see if they're going to help do that. I might go back in September because I got myself last July, and I highly recommend that you do it again about a year later because the first round, I'm 45, you know, they have a lot of work to do, whether you're sick or not. There's still a lot of regeneration that because they just think your body is a gigantic fetus that needs to be fixed, you know, whether there's something really wrong with it or not. But they kind of wear out. It doesn't mean that the benefit is wears off, but you could use this like a second round. So that's what I'm going to do this fall and maybe get also local injections in my Achilles heel to see if that helps too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we're going to have to follow up on you and see how that works for you. I'm thinking though, like when you inject into, say, like the belly fat, how do the stem cells know where to go for something like you mentioned earlier, like Parkinson's or a condition like that? How would the stem cells know where to go to like heal the body? Is it just kind of naturally know where to go?
Yeah, that's sort of they will admit they don't fully understand it either. And that's why I titled it the God cells, because it's just sort of like they're just, you know, doing God's work. They're just biology going in. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I mean, they obviously can naturally start going into your system, but that's the brilliance of them, because as they go through your system, like if your heart needs regeneration, whether it does or doesn't, everything in your body, especially as we're older, needs some sort of regeneration. The heart cells from this injection will go, oh, hey, there's the heart. We're going to hang out here for the rest of our lives and fix things. Same with like lung or anything neurological. They just know. If it sounds like science fiction, you just you're throwing things at the wall. But unfortunately, you know, that's all they know, is that, you know, they're safe and they go in and they fix things. and it's visible and measurable based on follow-up testing or even improvement of neurological function or whatever it might be, you know.
Wow, that's incredible. Yeah. And I think you mentioned too that the fetal cells, when they're harvested, they have these different parts in the body that are all harvested out. So like you said, like the heart cells, the brain cells, like the different, so like that's already all getting injected into you. Is that right?
That is correct. Yeah. I mean, it's obviously more detailed than that, but, you know, yes, but like, say, for instance, some of the sort of wannabe stem cell clinics and some of the other fetal clinics and stories you've heard, they generally only use brain and liver, because the brain is sort of the heart of your nervous system, and the liver is sort of the heart of your immune system. What makes M cells so much different is that you're getting the whole thing. So it takes it even farther. The reason they only use, say, brain and heart, like in the U.S. and some of the clinical trials that are underway and some of the handful of companies that are doing it in Tijuana, is because of having access to that. But because it's legal in the Ukraine, where they don't have to hide and skirt around regulations, since no one's bothering them and there's no shortages of fetal material. I mean, there's like, even in the U.S., one of every four pregnancies end in abortion. I mean, abortion is rampant. There's no it's everywhere. You know, it's just like a natural resource you can use versus throwing it away. But yes, the whole darn thing is harvested. I got a chance to see it. I didn't film. They wouldn't let me film it. But in the movie, you see me film everything else as far as the testing facility, and you meet the CEO of the lab and all the technicians. But yeah.
Anything you could I remember that part in the movie. Anything you can share about that, what you saw in there, or is that kind of off limits?
No, I was there when because it's not, you know, because when abortion occurs, it's not like it's necessarily planned, you know, far in advance. I was actually by accident witnessed, you know, them coming in. That took me a minute to realize what was happening. You know, with all this like the cooler material coming in. But no, I mean, yeah, I was able to look through multiple panes of glass because of the whole sterilization issue of it. I had to be like totally, you know, sterilized and dressed in scrubs and everything. I couldn't get I could only look through the glass of them harvesting the fetal material. But as far as the lab itself, there's basically three departments. Once the material comes in, it's all tagged and it's like batch numbers recorded, and it's immediately what do they call suspended. And that's really sort of the brilliance of the science comes in, is to be able to like literally suspend these cells in time, or, you know, freezing them, of course, but where they remain healthy, where they can be unsuspended before injection. So they're labeled with a number for each batch. And then that batch is immediately sent to three labs at the same time. One, like, bacteria lab. Make sure there's no bacteria whatsoever. One, any sort of virus, HIV, you name it. I mean, make sure there's none of that. And then the third lab is a sort of viability lab where they kind of replicate them. They have the environments created where the cells can allow themselves to duplicate and replicate, and so they watch them under a microscope to see if they're healthy, to see if they're capable, if they're just really strong, healthy cells. And if this batch fails in either three department, then they're immediately discarded. And about 30% of their material is thrown away, and just can't use it. And by the way, every single one of these tests are done three times to make absolutely certain that these things are absolutely safe. The last thing they need, is anyone getting sick because of these things. So, and to this day, there's been no reported cases. It's basically the process.
Hey, gentlemen, have you joined the best Facebook group on the planet yet? Man, I talk about this group all the time, but for good reason. The Elite Man Mastermind group on Facebook is the hands-down one collection of like-minded men you have to be a part of. I'm talking about world-class performers here. Authors, podcasters, life coaches, dating coaches, relationship experts, health and fitness experts, nutritionists, doctors. There's so many awesome professionals in this group willing to lend you a hand. And give you advice, give you their best tips and strategies and techniques for mastering life and becoming the best man you can be. And there's thousands of incredible, regular, awesome dudes like yourself in this group as well, who share advice, who share information, who inspire each other and take each other to the next level of becoming the best version of themselves. So join the group right now if you haven't already. I feel like I talk about this all the time, but I love this group. It's so inspiring. It's incredible. You have to be a part of it if you're not a part of it yet. Just ask any one of the thousands of guys who are in this group. We absolutely love it. We talk about it every day. We're involved every day. It's incredible, and I want you to be a part of it too. So go to EliteManMastermind.com. It's going to forward you right to Facebook, or just go to Facebook and type in Elite Man Mastermind. You can join the group that way as well. Either way, I'll see you on the inside, guys. So keep kicking ass and taking names.
Eric, what were your results like when you went in there? I know you didn't have any major, medical issues or illnesses, diseases, that type of thing, but you kind of just went in there, like you said earlier, to kind of tune things up. How did you feel after doing it?
Okay, it takes about 4 to 8 weeks to kind of kick in. And it's hard to describe because we're used to taking drugs. Like if we get a cold and take some NyQuil, we know how that affects us, you know? But biology, when you're injected with stem cells, it's sort of weird thing to describe. And it's gradual. Aside from things like having more sound sleep, weird skin things like, I don't know, like mild eczema. I've always been battling with like dandruff since I was a kid. All that kind of stuff just completely went away. The most noticeable thing that happened, 2 months into it was my libido just exploded. Like, being in my 40s, it was like being 18. What I mean by that is, as a man, you're a man. I mean, when you remember what it was like as a teenager and in college, we just wanted to have sex with everything that moved. And that was like that again. You know what I mean? And, not that was unfaithful to my wife, but you know what I'm trying to say. I'm just saying that, it was that when you're on your mind all the time, it's like, you just went back in time. And by the way, a lot of people like in their 80s and 90s, the guys with erectile dysfunction go there just for these reasons. They have an entire erectile dysfunction kind of protocol. Anyway, so there's that. What's really fascinating is on a mental standpoint, it was kind of a crazy year when I was getting them done last year. I had a family member get diagnosed with terminal cancer. I was battling with funding to get this movie done, and I wasn't even sure if I was going to get this thing done. There's a lot of just kind of chaos going on, and a lot of it maybe is even self-inflicted. I kind of took on too much to try to accomplish. Once these things sort of kicked in, I streamlined my life like I never had before. I just started cutting out all the fat. Whenever stressful situations arose, I was able to deal with them better than I ever had, ever previously. It's really hard to describe. Like really, split second decisions that are very important that were made with confidence, like I've never made like it before. I know it sounds bizarre. That's another thing I just noticed. And one weird thing it took me many months to realize, ever since I was, in my early 20s, I've had this like benign tumor or cyst on my lower back and kind of near my belt line. And I even had it was always just annoying. It would protrude like, if you like ran your hand across it, it would like, you could feel it. It was like this tumor. It wasn't like, you know, huge and disfiguring. It was just there and it was annoying. It was maybe, you know, a couple of inches in, you know, circumference. And I even had it surgically removed and it came right back, you know. Unbelievably, it is gone. It was about 6 months in. I just noticed, I just kind of felt down and I screamed out to my wife, like, honey, am I hallucinating? Like, where is this? I've been battling this thing for 20 years and it just disappeared. And of course, I emailed them, MSL, and I said, does this make sense to you? Like, how do I? They're like, yeah, it was totally the cells. It's just one of those things. We'll put it in your file. This is great. Uh-huh. So there's that fascinating sort of weird things. I've always been a contact lens wearer. And as a kid or, you know, teenager in college, I'd wear dailies. I'd forget I have them in, you know, because they're so comfortable. As you get older, after about the 8 to 10 hour mark, you just your eyes get dry. You're like, oh, I got to switch to glasses. That stopped again, where I would forget that I had them in. It's like my eyes were rejuvenated as well. Like they're more lubricated. And it's just like an overall tune-up, like all the stuff that felt what you felt when you were much younger, it kind of comes back again, if you can believe that. Yeah.
No, that is amazing, man.
Yeah.
I totally believe it. I mean, just listening to you and some of the other people out there doing the little research I've done into the stem cells, it kicks in all types of things, like you said, that you didn't even know were there. You didn't have any idea that it would help or correspond to improving something. It's just like, whoa, like you wake up one day and like, wow, that's kind of gone, or that's, you know, feels better. Or, you know, I have a little more energy. I think a little more clearly now. It's like you said, man, I love the title, The God Cells. It just does what it naturally does and knows kind of where to go to fix little things that are hindering you over the years.
Yeah, it's fascinating. It really, in a way, this story encapsulates everything that I've been working on. From, you know, going back to the FDA and market problems, the biggest problem with stem cells, adult or fetal, is that this is biology, that there's really no way to corner the market or harness a patent out of it. So you've got that. And then not to mention the fact that it's a biological rejuvenation versus a chemical Band-Aid. It's totally slaps in the face of what this entire industry is built upon. You have that. And then it's just the very idea that this is like a sort of like a new paradigm shift in science, where we're rejuvenating our bodies instead of trying to fix it with chemicals. It's got it all, as far as I'm concerned, this whole story. Another quick example. I'm not sure if I told you this since we talked, but when I was there in May with some of my family members, there was a kid who had autism. He was 12, and I spent a week with him, and I was filming him as well. And I might do a follow up, and you know, for the YouTube channel for the movie. I always like pumping out content in relationship to the movie, because these stories don't end with the movie being released. It continues, and it's just a great way to kind of keep the story alive. So if people follow the movie on Facebook or on YouTube, you'll always get updates, or sign up for the mailing list, of course. But this autistic kid who was 12. Only spoke in like one word bursts, and kind of classic autistic kid. He was probably happier than most kids, but he couldn't really look at you in the eye, couldn't really communicate. And that's the problem with autistic kids, why they get so frustrated, because they don't know how to communicate. This kid now, the mom is like beside herself, is speaking full sentences. Like they were in an Uber, and the kid out of nowhere says, "This is a great song. Turn up the volume." The mom just couldn't believe what she just heard. They walked into Starbucks. He goes, "I'm in my favorite place. I'm in Starbucks." These are things that this kid has never done. And since this kid is in special school like most autistic kids, all the other parents, without even knowing what this kid did, because she didn't advertise what they did. She didn't, you know, say, "Oh, guess what? I went to Ukraine and got fetal stem cells for my son." No, everybody's going, "What the hell is going on with your son? Why is he? What is this? What is happening?" And already, two kids have already gone since stem cells.
Wow.
They just got back a couple weeks ago. So that's just what it goes to show for autism. It's not some kind of magic bullet cure for anything, but it's really remarkable. But being there, kind of worried about this kid, because they were like, he's 12, he's a little older. They prefer treating younger autistic kids. They have a better track record, but still they showed remarkable results. Like one guy with multiple sclerosis. And by the way, it's not a one fix usually. Like they're going to go back again, probably in the spring. And that's something else I found when these things work for you, it's a regular part of your regimen for the rest of your life, either once a year or once every couple of years. Everybody just keeps going back. They just budgeted it in, because at the end of the day, it is expensive. It's like between $16,000 and $18,000, depending on how long you're there, but it's no more or less than that. just think about the money you're saving on healthcare costs, et cetera, if these things are working for you. So, but yeah, another guy with multiple sclerosis who had two canes, no longer needs them. He got them in Tijuana and actually in Kyiv. He's had an even better reaction after the cells treatment in Kyiv. He's just delighted. I actually have him and his doctor in the movie. The doctor is just like flabbergasted because he's been this his patient of this doctor for 30 years. So this doctor has known this guy for 30 years, and where he got the MS, multiple sclerosis, went on to two canes, you know, goes to Tijuana and the Ukraine, comes back, you know, walking perfectly and it's fine, you know. And by the way, we did an MRI of, because MRI with MS is diagnostic. You get plaques on the brain. The plaques went away after the treatment worked. So again, wow. It's measurable. It's not just placebo effect, you know, miracle. It's this is like a real deal. It's pretty crazy. But again, I don't want to mislead your audience or anybody listening. If you've like people with Parkinson's that have had it for so like 15, 20 years, I've not seen it help them at all. However, someone that has Parkinson's for 2, 3, 4, 5 years, I've seen it stop their shaking. They've said their pain has gone away. And they've, you know, just, they've slowly started to wean off their medication, things like that. So it's sort of like the younger and or earlier these conditions are intercepted with this technology, specifically in the nervous system related stuff like Parkinson's or MS, the better chances you have. It does, like one woman that went up with us, because by the way, whenever I say I'm going to go, right, because people inevitably email me, and I'll just, you know, to try to put them in the right direction or connect them with a patient who has the same ailment as them or whatever, just to kind of keep the community going. I'll say, hey, I'm going with my family or some people, and they're like, ooh, okay, that's where I want to go. So that happens a lot. Anyway, so if anybody listening, I might be going in September or October, I don't know, but I'm just saying, throwing it out there. Because I'm saying that too because I'd like to, maybe they'd like me, let me film them because, I'm hoping to release a lot of these stories. But this one woman who had like a dozen different immunological-based like ailments, just one of those unfortunate people is just a mess. She still was a busy professional. She tried to get by, but she had like, I can't even remember the name of all of it. She had like irritable bowel and all these like organ problems. And she was constantly just in and out of doctor's offices. Like 80% of her issues are completely gone away after about 6 to 8 weeks of these things kicking in. She just can't believe it. Her husband, who was very skeptical and very annoyed with her decision to do this, and just annoyed with me, honestly, is now just taking a complete 180, you know. It's really fascinating.
Wow. That is fascinating, man. The guy who had the MS, did his basically, like, go away completely so he had no symptoms of MS anymore?
Just about. I mean, he still is a little stiff. Like he, you know, he's not wobbly or fallen down like where he needed like aids, like canes to keep him up or he could hurt himself. It's not perfect. But like, so it's not like this perfect cure, but he's able to live a normal life. You know, he travels all the time. I think he's retired and he's, you know, he can get around airports. He can drive himself around town. He can take care of himself just like any normal person. You wouldn't know it any better. If you just met him, you wouldn't know anything was wrong with him. But yeah, I mean, he still, I asked him the same question. He's like, yeah, I still got a little bit of the weirdness. You know, I'm not like I was, you know, he's like, when he walks, he's a little more stiff than he'd like to be. But again, it's like night and day compared to, you know, basically on your way to being wheelchair bound, you know?
Yeah. Seriously. So, I mean, basically like a fully functioning human being again and, you know, maybe like a little bit of leftover kind of stuff from before.
Yeah, and again, he's just going to continue doing it every year or two just to keep the maintenance, keeping it going.
Does it get better every time he goes, like progressively better, or is it just, like you said, a maintenance type of thing so he keeps it up?
In his case, yes. It wasn't like the first round of cells immediately got rid of his canes. He just noticed an improvement enough so where he was willing to spend more money and go back and again and again and again. So, yeah, it depends on the person. But, yeah, almost inevitably on the average, each time you get them, you gradually get closer to your goal, basically. There are a few weird fluke cases where people just had a complete remission and still no one fully understands why. Like this one woman with Parkinson's who, started playing piano again after one round of cells. She couldn't even hold a fork, you know. But yeah.
Wow.
Yeah,
saying Parkinson's basically went away after one round from this particular woman?
Yeah, which is totally, no one, even the people that gave it, that's, no one understands it. But she's happy.
Oh, shit. Yeah.
But again, at the same time, I watched one patient who's now passed away who had Parkinson's for, this individual who was playing piano, she only had Parkinson's for 3 or 4 years. It just came on really fast and really hard. Most people with Parkinson's, it's a gradual kind of decline. But, you know, at the same time, this is around this moment was being treated. Another person went in twice and had no improvement. I mean, they had other interesting little improvements, but not the improvement they're looking for, not the the Parkinson's, you know, problems that they were having, you know. So, yeah.
Did that particular lady that went in once, did she even have to go back in, or did she even want to go back in again, or was it just like, I'm good, you know, leave me alone, yeah. I feel good?
Yeah, everybody's personalities are different. Like, she is a very stubborn woman. She didn't want to, she tried to hide her diagnosis from everyone. She still tried to drive her car. Like, she showed me her car. I almost put it in the movie because I thought it was just kind of funny. But her car has, like, dents all over it when she was driving her car still with this diagnosis. But she's just one of those people that she'd rather, you know, I'm sure you know the type, she'd rather, you know, die, or people think, make people think she's drunk before she would admit that she has Parkinson's, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Anyway, but so to answer your question, yeah, no, she hasn't gone back. I don't think she's needed, not to my knowledge. I haven't spoken to her, I don't know, in at least a year. I probably should reach out to her again. But we were like, I follow her on Facebook, just like everybody does nowadays. I haven't seen any reason to believe that her health has gone back downhill. But
that's really cool, yeah. Man. So how good are these doctors, by the way, that when you go to this MCEL place, are they like world-class kind of, you know, top-notch doctors, or are they just kind of like there to facilitate things and make sure that the procedure goes well? I mean,
yeah.
Obviously, if you're going overseas, there's kind of some worry about the, you know, the quality of doctors there.
Oh, of course, yeah. No, it's interesting. MCEL, this medical experience was probably more comprehensive than anything in the States for me. First of all, like, if you want to go to MCEL, whether you're sick or healthy, they request a huge amount of paperwork from you, especially if you're diagnosed with something. And they have about seven doctors, most all of whom have PhDs in fetal stem cells, which is just, you know, again, a kind of unheard of, the fact that it even exists. But it does now because it's legal there. But all seven of those doctors will sit like on a panel, and they will review each case. They do not charge you for this. This is all free. They will review each case before even accepting you. So not only have they already reviewed everything about you before you get on a plane, but then, yeah, you are tested for everything under the sun, and then they go further from there. So, but no, the doctors are absolutely spectacular. They're not, yeah. I mean, because this is like their life. They are as obsessed with this probably as I am. This is like their life. They live to treat people with fetal stem cells. And not only are they medical doctors, but they work in the research and development. They're constantly working behind the scenes to make it better. So even in the year and a half or so, or maybe 2 years I've known this group, they've already altered protocols and changed things based on their research and data. So it's not just like a mechanical situation where you're, you know, you go in to see your doctor and that's the end of it. It's much more intense than that. Yeah.
Cool. And what's the kind of potential or progression of this as you can see it? I mean, is it getting better every single day? Where do you think things might be in like 5-10 years from now? Is it going to be to the point where people with, like, you know, late stage Parkinson's, or they've had it for 20 years, these types of people can get better, or the, you know, the other MS people that you know, haven't seen results with it, or any other type of really kind of really bad neurodegenerative or other type of disease? Do you think that kind of stuff is on the horizon to being fixed soon?
Well, I'd like to think so, but let me give you this example. The people I interviewed and the president and the whole board meeting of CIRM, which stands for the California Institute for Regenerative Medicine, this organization was placed on the ballot back in 2004 in the state of California, just like how anything else has been put on the ballot, like the marijuana issues, et cetera. But this group wanted to bring stem cells to the forefront, and they still do. They were put on the ballot. They were voted into existence. Since their existence in 2004, we're now in 2017, they've been provided $8 billion, $8 billion with a B, and they have gotten nowhere. Not because they're not good people, not because they're not very excited and committed to this. It's because of the industry and regulatory pushback, the FDA. They are making it impossible for them. They're not either barely out of the gate, and I show them in the movie just completely frustrated with this. And again, going back to what we said early in the conversation about the financial incentive to keep this down, that's the problem. They're making it – they've literally going back to, like, there's like three pharma lobbyists for every member of Congress, which is hilarious in its own right. But they've gone so far, and the reason you have lobbyists is to start changing legislation and changing laws for the favor of your people that are hired, that hired you. And they have gone so far to slowing stem cells down. They've changed a law where they say it takes 3 years-ish once all the crap has gone through to get a drug approved to market, right? It's going to take a decade once you go through another decade before that to get stem cells for one ailment to market, to one type of cell. So they're doing – to answer your question, I'd like to be sound hopeful, you know, but I just have a hard time having a lot of hope in it just because of what we're up against from a market standpoint and the huge forces against this technology. What I try to look at it as, the same with the Brzezinski thing and everything else, is that at least we're fortunate enough to know that we could get on a plane and go to the Ukraine and get this stuff for now. I mean, at least that's there. So I'm kind of a glass half full kind of guy. This science was allowed to be unleashed without any hindrance with politics and bureaucracy, yeah, I mean, it would be amazing. It would be a new paradigm where the days of, you know, trying to come up with a chemical that you're going to patent and have an army of lawyers to defend, you know, to keep your company's stock market up would go away, and stem cells would just be the future of everything. Yeah, that's what I believe. But it's just we don't live in that world right now, unfortunately.
I mean, like we said earlier in the conversation, you know, the FDA will block things, like the guy Ralph Moss. He was the whistleblower, and it's something that was 80% effective. I mean, this has the potential to be even way more effective than that. Something that was 80% effective for stopping cancer, though, was rejected simply because it was – and even, you know, guys like David Axelrod rejected it because of the implications it would have on the economy. And just imagine something with the potential to not only do – and by the way, this could potentially, like, cure cancer and things like that too, right, not just neurological conditions and stuff.
Are you talking about stem cells?
Yeah.
Is that the only thing that there's no evidence to suggest that it would? Now, there is ways, like there's a great clinic in outside of Miami that does the adult stem cells in the sense that they treat a lot of regular ailments legally, but they allegedly are able to take a piece of your biopsy and do a genetic genome test on it, and they somehow take that and create a vaccine personalized for your cancer. I haven't seen a lot of data on this, but to answer your question, no, that's the only part of the stem cell world that I haven't seen any convincing data that is going to cure cancer, no.
Okay.
That's it. But going back to what you're talking about, say, Laetril and the Ralph Moss story, I want to be clear about that, too. Everyone that's listening, yes, apricot kits are easy to buy. You can purchase the tablets online, but the stuff that was tested at Sloan Kettering that stopped cancer 80% of the time was the injectable form, which you can get a hold of, but finding a doctor in the United States to give you this is next to impossible. So, yeah, it might make you feel good by eating apricot seeds or whatever, but when you understand the science and the chemical reaction going on, all the enzyme reactions involved and in the sort of mechanism of action to kill cancer, most of that already occurs before it gets through your digestive system. That's a big difference. So they injected the injectable form of Laetril into the bloodstream of these mice. I think it's important for people to understand that. Going back to that, the problem is, because it's like basically an industrial byproduct of, you know, apricot canning industry, and anybody with a basic chemistry degree and the right equipment, not expensive equipment, maybe $5,000 or $10,000 of equipment, can get bushels and bushels of apricot seeds and make this stuff. So theoretically, and that's what was happening, by the way. You could see if you buy the Blu-ray or DVD or rent it on Vimeo or VHX, you know, beyond just the movie, I have all these extras, all the stuff that went on that I didn't want to kind of shove in the movie. And you see the FDA raiding people who are making this Laetril or amygdalin. And the comedy of it is the newscasters say, the FDA alerted the press 3 days before the raid to make sure cameras were rolling, you know. It's like, got to keep the propaganda going, you know, got to keep the scare going. You can't patent this stuff. And even if you patented it, somebody else will come and do some version of it because it's just apricot pits, man, you know. And any general practitioner or oncologist could theoretically have a lab in the back of his office where this stuff's being made, where he doesn't even need a pharmaceutical company to give it to him. They can make it on their own. That's the problem with this substance, unfortunately. It's like, you know, as one person said, I put in the quote in the movie, you know, who's going to buy chemotherapy at $75,000 a pop when you can get Laetril at 75 cents? You know, that's the problem. So.
Yeah, and it's just
crazy. I guess at this point we're sort of banking on the Ukrainians as far as the stem cells go, though, right? Because it doesn't look like it's going to happen here in the U.S. anytime soon unless something major happens or changes.
Well, I mean, you can still get the adult cells. The difference, though, but yeah, when it comes to fetal, that's, in my opinion, this is just me. And again, I've looked everywhere, and so has the Ukrainians, to find another country where this is actually legal. It's not legal anywhere else, even though it's allegedly being done, like, in India and China, and, of course, allegedly in Tijuana as well. You don't really know what's going on there because they're skirting regulation, and you don't know what the hell you're going to really get. You want to believe you're getting fetal, but at least with the Ukrainians, you know what you're getting. There, I witnessed the whole darn thing, I had it myself. But yeah, but like adults themselves, the only downside, again, aside from them, they're not dangerous, of course, and there's no evidence to suggest that they are, is that you're hoping that those cells become, say, a brain or a heart or whatever cell that has been given back to you from yourself, but those cells are as old as you are, so they also suffer from all the DNA damage and breakdown and all, et cetera. From that, if those cells are not like a young cell. They're as old as you are. So you have that problem. And, you know, versus fetal being only 7 to 12 weeks old, these cells are responsible for building an entire human being in 9 months. These are like supercharged biology. So, yeah. So, yeah, to answer your question, yeah, when it comes to fetal, I can't see anywhere else that's going on right now. No.
Yeah, so switching gears, man, back to the Dr. Brzezinski thing, and then we'll sort of wrap things up. But I did want to touch back on this because it's fascinating. I know we talked about this before, but can you just kind of break down the protocol that Brzezinski was using? And we'll just kind of talk about his story briefly and then, like, the protocol that he actually used to treat and reverse cancer in so many patients.
Yeah, essentially, like any good scientific discovery, it was completely by accident, you know. It's like, I think that's how penicillin was created. They're like, oh my gosh, what's this mold growing on this, you know. But that's what happened with Brzezinski. He was getting his PhD in biochemistry after getting his medical degree. He just stumbled upon this strain of peptides in blood and urine that had never been recorded before at the time. As one guy put it, it's like such a surprise. It's like finding a whole new coast of islands or a bunch of islands off the coast of Miami. Like, where the hell were these all these years? So he was well praised, and it made the news when he discovered this. This was back when he was still living in Poland. But then he wanted to get out of Poland because he wanted to get away from the communist state. He just wanted to come to the land of the free, which is even more ironic about this story. But he kept studying these peptides, and both he found them in blood and urine, the two biggest sources of our liquids in our system, of course. And then he would study it in different ages of people, different races, different sexes, and inevitably people with different diseases. And he found that people with cancer had a really low count of these peptides, or sometimes with really late stage cancer, it was almost like undetectable. These peptides weren't there. So like any brilliant scientist, he just put two and two together and said, holy cow, what if I extracted blood from people and then pulled the peptides out, process them, and give it back to people? Wouldn't that be interesting? And he started doing that in like kind of preclinical ways. And he would like beg people to donate blood. I mean, this is like really in the early days. When he now realized how cumbersome that was, he started collecting urine, like vats of it. It sounds crazy, but like he'd make deals with prisons and private parks and like big gasoline sized trucks of urine to do this. I'm going to jump forward really quick. By the early 80s, he learned how to make these things on his own. So it wasn't like, you know, he always needed this. But so here's what's interesting. So in preclinical studies, he comes to the States first. He gets a job at Baylor College of Medicine in Texas. And they give him a teaching job, but they also were very interested in this peptides. They helped him apply for grants with our National Cancer Institute. He was funded by the National Cancer Institute in the early days to study this. He was then asked to kind of, when they realized how powerful this was, they were like asked him to kind of come into the fold. And being the kind of guy that he is, and running from the bureaucracy of communist Poland, and maybe just being very smart as well, he didn't just jump on the deal because he would lose his ownership of this invention. He would be an employee of whomever he was going to make a deal with, that the National Cancer Institute, or they were going to probably set him up at a pharmaceutical company or whatever. He wasn't ready to just do that. So he hired a legal team to check out to see if he could go it alone. And sure enough, at the time especially, Texas being the sort of the kind of crazy renegade state with a lot of less regulation down there, at the time, as it was proven, a legal team came together and came up with a legal opinion letter and said that, okay, based on the law, as long as you are treating your patients at your clinic with your invention, and there's no other reasonable option for your patient, and as long as that invention that you're giving your patients doesn't leave the state of Texas, it does not violate federal law, and under state law, it is perfectly legal. And that's what he did. So he set up a clinic in the late 70s. So you can imagine a Polish guy in this tiny little clinic in a strip mall with people that have gone through all cancer treatments, you can imagine, and they go to him as a last-ditch resort. He starts curing people. Not everybody at all, but he starts doing it. People that were just ready to die, that had just hopeless cases. And by the way, he let the Texas State Medical Board know what he was doing. It's just the lawyers recommended it. And he let the FDA know what he was doing, because the lawyers recommended that too. So there was like a track record of, and you know, that he wasn't doing, trying to hide what he was doing. So, but as soon as he started curing people, by 1983, all hell broke loose. The FDA filed a grand jury to try to have this guy thrown in prison. And they raided his clinic, first of all, like with guns. They like broke through the door, throwing cancer patients to the floor. And by the way, they raided this clinic every 3 or 4 years up until the 90s, by the way. This went on for more than 15 years. But that's which is all in my movie. I document all of this. But so basically, once he started curing people, every possible pushback occurred. The Texas Medical Board tried relentlessly to take away his medical license. So on the state level, they're like, got to remove his license. That'll shut him down. On the federal level, it was like, let's get a grand jury. Because the thing is, people would come from other states, like, say, California, and they would get the therapy. They'd have to go home with it. So there you go. Boom. Broke state laws. I mean, you know, broke federal law. But even though he did make deals legally to do so, because he knew that he was going to get hammered for this because of the whole federal versus state laws, but he was able to get permission, but it didn't matter at this point because, you know. Anyway, so they filed more than, like, the FDA filed, like, something like 12 grand juries against Brzezinski, none of which stuck until the mid-90s. And meanwhile, again, by the way, the Texas Medical Board is still trying to go after him on the state level. By the mid-90s, this is what happened. The National Cancer Institute gave him a psych visit, actually in the early 90s. The heads of the National Cancer Institute Brain Tumor Division went down there because he was treating a lot of brain cancer, kind of by accident, because most people that are diagnosed with brain cancer, even today, you're like, that's it, buddy. You know, you're not living through this. like look at like McCain, Ted Kennedy, you know. Anyway, so he just had a lot of data with brain cancer. So they prove, and all the documents are in the movie, and I have all these documents I'm talking about on the movie's website, BrzezinskiMovie.com. I have a whole interactive transcript where you can watch the movie line by line of dialogue, and you can look at the documents in full, and you know, for fact checking, because it is such a crazy, unbelievable story. So this is the most amazing part of the story. So in the 90s, a Irish pharmaceutical company, the CEO's sister-in-law was cured by Brzezinski, right? So he's like, holy shit, we should make a deal with this guy. He just cured my sister-in-law of brain cancer. So he makes a deal with this Irish pharmaceutical company called Elon. One of Brzezinski's own employees gets recruited by Elon, and they work together to try to file duplicate patents by like kind of rearranging his patent in cooperation with our National Cancer Institute and the Food and Drug Administration, while the Food and Drug Administration was filing grand juries against him, finally got one to stick, goes to federal court. He wins the trial. Brzezinski wins the trial. Two trials. They fail the first time. They go right back to court again. Two sets of jury trials, not guilty. And by the way, they would not allow into the courtroom whether or not the treatment works or not. That was not allowed. So every witness that was up on the stand is like, well, yeah, but it cured my brain cancer. Oh, no, struck it from the record. Can't have that on there.
Wow.
Ignore that, jury. Ignore that. Yeah. So, and it was so crazy that the jurors from the first trial actually showed up, took time off of work, showed up to the second trial to protest the trial. They're like, why is this happening? What are we doing this man? This is insane. So anyway, what I'm trying to say is right after he was free, this thing went away, at least for them. They're still trying to go after him in other ways. But as far as the federal court criminal action, they can't go after him anymore. They've failed. But all these patents surfaced. And they even had the balls to put his name in there as a source, as a source that he was publishing his work all through this time. You know, he was like any good scientist. They published the data. You know, if you want people to take you seriously. So, but yeah, and the name on the patent was the United States government. And DeVorz, I mean, one of his employees, you know, in cooperation with Elon Pharmaceuticals, like all of it was there. It was like the biggest confession ever. But the thing is, they never believed that they would fail at throwing this guy in jail. They wanted to, like, it was like something like 380 years in prison or something insane. Like, you couldn't even serve the term. Like, all the charges had stuck. So that's a mind blower when you have a government, U.S. government, trying to throw a man in prison while simultaneously trying to steal the substance from the man that you're trying to in prison. You know, it's fascinating. So anyway, what they also happened was is that because they failed, the FDA failed, and during the trial itself, they had no choice. They had to do the right thing. The FDA had to open up clinical trials for this man and patients. That's all he ever wanted from day one, is to have the FDA let him play ball like anybody else in this industry. So they were forced to do it. They never expected to lose this case. So they ended up doing phase two clinical trials, and he finished them ever since the mid-90s. And he just finished them up. I think it was like 2010. It wasn't that long ago, something like that. There's dozens of them, you know, first cures in history of humanity for a certain pediatric brain tumor called a brainstem glioma. Interestingly enough, Ben Carson, before he got into politics, one of the it's a long story. I know we don't have a lot of time, but one of the people who was cured of by Brzezinski ended up being treated by Ben Carson later for a benign brain tumor that was not cancerous. They wanted to get the tumor taken out. And he was looking through the data of this patient and said, oh my gosh, she's doing great for having kidney, liver, and lung cancer and all the chemotherapy she must have undergone. They said, no. Brzezinski, I'll keep this short. He's like, who's Brzezinski? He's like, oh, watch this movie after the second visit, because I told the family to bring my darn movie to Ben Carson. He watches it, calls up Brzezinski, says, I have never seen anyone cure a brainstem glioma. I've been trying to cure that for decades. It's never happened. And by the way, 90% of all kids that get it are dead by 2 years. There's not a single living survivor at 5-year mark, except for patients that were treated within FDA trials using Brzezinski's antineoplastins. So this alone, and by the way, okay, Ben Carson was going to open up clinical trials over his hospital. Again, before politics, he had like hours of conversations with Brzezinski. Poof, went away. You know, somebody got to him. Anyway, but the point is I'm trying to get at is there's no reason in the world why the FDA cannot approve antineoplastant at this stage right now just for the single pediatric brain tumor type. Because when you get a cancer drug or any drug approved, it's for a certain condition. So there's only 400 kids in this country get this particular brain tumor. Here's the problem. That's kind of what Axelrod was talking about. Even if you approve it for just tumor to treat these 400 kids per year, and it wasn't a magic bullet. You're talking like a 20% survival rate, like 1 of 5 might make it. But still, it's better than 5 of 5 being dead. You know what I mean? So, but if you get it approved for that, then boom, it's on the market for that. And anybody, you, me, or anyone can insist to have this therapy and pay out of pocket for it. If insurance won't cover it, if you have, say, lung, liver, or whatever, because it's not approved for that. But then that's the problem. And that's a huge problem for the industry, is that if we let this go just for that tiny condition, if we had an ounce of morality and we're like, let's just treat these 400 kids a year with this little invention, we can't do it, guys, because everybody will want it, and they can get it, and they will raise the money, and we're screwed, you know? And that's where we're at. That's Brzezinski, and that's what he threatens to do right now. But people can still go down there and get it. I think it's important to point out. Because these right-to-try laws I mentioned, there's a big right-to-try law in Texas that opened up, that passed, and then now it's coming to the federal level where, again, Brzezinski, just by the skin of his teeth, once again, is going to probably succeed where it may not be approved by the FDA. That might be fine. But people, as long as he's alive, and as long as no one, you know, blows that place up, then, you know, you can go down there and get this therapy. You're going to pay out of pocket. It's going to be expensive. It's unfortunate, but, you know, it depends on how bad you want to live, you know. So
What was his success rate for the other types of cancers? I know you said like 20% for that really rare child brain tumor. What about some of the other ones there?
Sure. It's all over the place. Like glioblastoma, what John McCain had, that has a pretty high success rate of that. Again, it's not even really 50%. I don't think I have exact numbers in front of me. It's not a magic bullet, but it's still something. It's a viable option that for types of cancers that most people have never lived through. I got my Brzezinski sequel when I released the first one. all these cancer patients came emailing me, kind of like what's happening now with the stem cell thing. And I decided to make a sequel. And I followed people, and I had two patients with the exact same tumor that John McCain has. And they're supposed to die. And they both ended up becoming cancer-free. One of them, unfortunately, had a relapse about a year and a half later. And due to FDA nonsense, and this patient lives in England, it was a big pile of shit to get back on the therapy based on legal nonsense. And also at that time, the FDA, I think honestly because of my movie, went in and tried to shut them down again in early 2013. But what I'm trying to say is it got rid of both of these people's glioblastoma. One of them is still alive now, cancer-free, 5 years later. The other one had a relapse a year after that. But so that, and right in front of my eyes. So it's not really so much the types of cancers. Here's what makes it more confusing. And today, people realize that cancer is a genetic problem. That doesn't mean that you inherited it in your genes so much as it's a genetic malfunction. So, like, if you remember when Angelina Jolie was tested for this BRCA gene, and she freaked out and had a hysterectomy, and she had a double mastectomy, and because she didn't want to get cancer. And nowadays, when you get cancer, you get your biopsy tested. This is all based on the sort of the Human Genome Project that was done a long time ago. And they run it through this huge database to find out what kind of genetic mutations you have. And also, it happens to pair you up. There's no room for human error with what substances on the market can potentially help your cancer. One member of my family had her biopsy, and the regimen that spit back did great. She had a recurrence, but we're going to go back again. But the point is, to answer your question, it's not so much what are the stats in liver cancer, because it's kind of irrelevant about the cancer type. It's about what genes have malfunctioned. So with antineoplastons, his invention, it targets, especially in brain cancer, over 100 genes related to brain cancer. Now, cancer has a genetic mutation problems between 2,000 to 3,000 types of genes. But if we'll explain why it's not a magic bullet cure. But 100-ish genes can be affected versus, say, like an Avastin or a Temodar, which are two big blockbuster billion-dollar cancer drugs that are gene-targeted. They only target a handful of genes. And our antineoplastons have like 100. So what I'm trying to say is, depending on the luck of your draw and what genetic mutation you have will depend on how well antineoplastons will work for you. So that's another interesting thing about this world, is that everything's compartmentalized. Like, what are the statistics for ovarian or brain or liver? And people will say, what is Brzezinski's statistics for this type of cancer? It's relevant to what the statistics are for that type of cancer. It's about what your body is contained in, what genetic mutations are involved, and can maybe match his medications, if that makes sense.
Yeah, it makes sense. And of course, like, you know, the statistics too that people probably bring up are the 20% that he's saving in the kids or whatever, but it's like, yeah, the 0% compared to the 0%, that's an incredible number. I mean, it's just mind-blowing. But so you're saying that his anti-neoplastons, his whole therapy helps a bunch of different cancers and can cure, I don't like using that word, but cure, reverse, many different types of cancers out there and help with 100 or so genes?
Yeah. I mean, but the most important thing, too, is that aside from it being seemingly more effective than what's on the market, you don't have all the side effects. Like, you do have to have this Hickman line, it's called. It's like this catheter installed in your chest, and you have a tube that goes right into your system. And you carry around with you 24 hours a day like this little bag that's battery powered. And you have the two main medications, one's called A10, one called AS-1. Doesn't really matter, but there's two separate IV bags that are mixed together and sent into your system. You're on a 24-hour infusion, but there's no real side effects. You pee a lot. You might at the beginning get a little bit of a fever because your body's adjusting to it. You might have to make sure your Hickman line doesn't get infected. But you compare that to, you know, scolding radiation and, you know, life-threatening chemotherapy. It's a totally different thing. So I guess what I'm trying to say is, most reasonable people, if you had the options on the table, who wouldn't want that first? Okay, if Brzezinski's fails, then I'll go to chemo. Fuck it, you know, not going to radiation, but at least I'm going to try this first. What if it works? Then I don't have to worry about all this insanity. I don't have to worry about maybe getting leukemia 5 years later because of all the bone marrow damage chemo's done. I don't have to worry about my hair falling out. Maybe I can. And these people on antineoplastons, they can go back. They can keep working. You have this annoying bag with you, kind of like if women, it's just like carrying a purse versus chemo, which you're going to be laid out for a few days in between, things like that, you know. So. Yeah.
What is Brzezinski up to right now in, you know, 2017 and going forward? And also, what would happen if something Like, if he died, if something ever happened to him, would his kind of treatment just die out, or is there other people doing it?
Well, first of all, what's happening to him now, since it's like the double-edged sword of the success of my movie, what I mean by that is, because it was successful and people knew about it, and because it brought a boatload of patients and all these people started popping up with these miraculous cures, and because he finished phase two testing, which no one thought he would do, and because he was given permission for phase three randomized for this particular rare brain tumor in kids, and by the way, no American hospital would allow them to be done on their property because it had to be an independent study outside of Brzezinski's realm, which makes sense. That's the way science is created. You want to verify this for the final step. Because of all these things, a whole new phenomenon occurred. It's called astroturfing. This is it stands for fake grassroots. And it's like the new norm for propaganda today when they want to fight something. It's the same idea when they made up the nonsense about, Obama being a Muslim who wasn't born in America, or like the John Kerry Swift voting. I'm not trying to play politics here. I don't care if you're left or right. It doesn't change the reality that these things are happening that are just nonsense. You know what I mean? Like, and it works because the job is to instill doubt. So I'm getting at a point here. They not only have gone, they've hired these groups of people to like maliciously go and blog incessantly. These people that understand the Google search optimization settings and how to make things rise to the top on search engines and certain search categories. They will also own the Wikipedia page on Brzezinski, and they will write their own articles that are nonsense and link them to their own nonsense Wikipedia page as sources. They'll even leave comments on the peer-reviewed sites like called PubMed, they're like pretending to be medical professionals, like trying to poke holes in this. It's just nonsense. It's insanity. It's like something that goes on in Russia, like when you hear all of these, the craziness of sabotage, It's like something out of a science fiction movie, But anyway, the point is they also have harassed the FDA and the Texas Medical Board relentlessly to take out Brzezinski. So the FDA went in, they kind of quote rated him in 2013. They did it again in 2015 because of these people. And then because they're like, so what, you're not doing your job. You're not protecting the public. You've got to get rid of this crazy quack Brzezinski, but they also hounded the Texas Medical Board, and the Texas Medical Board took him to trial again. And this just finished this year. It went on for 2 years. I went there and filmed all of it, by the way. You can see the whole darn trail on YouTube, all of it, unedited, if you got the time. But, again, Brzezinski spent about $1 million in legal defense fund, and, of course, he was not guilty. He kept his license, the same story over and over. They're just trying to slow him down. But I don't know, but the film continues to keep moving. On Amazon Prime, it's getting a lot of attention and views. He keeps getting more and more patients. He's doing fine. Now, with the question of what will happen to him if something happens to him, that's sort of up in the air. We don't know. I mean, for instance, he would think, okay, why doesn't this guy just get the hell out of the country? He can't really, because it's a 50,000 square foot facility worth millions of dollars that makes the stuff. First of all, you have to take it and move it. He's in his 70s. That's not going to happen. And it's just going to be in the same boat. And you can't, if he sets up shop in Mexico or wherever, you have to be on his therapy for a while. And you cannot just, most people with like a family or whatever, can't go stay in Mexico for 6 months. Because if you try to go home with it, it's like taking back heroin. You're going to get arrested at the border, because this is not a legally approved medication. And you can't exactly hide it because it's sticking out of your chest and you got carrying a bag, But yeah, it's a good question. I mean, he has a son. Will his son pick up the torch? I don't know. Maybe he will. I don't know. Will somebody, it's interesting. Brzezinski has gotten by the skin of his teeth all these years somehow. I think it's because he's just got such a relentless personality, never willing to give up. Maybe at the last minute, somebody will swoop in and save the day. I don't know. There has been a lot of high-level people, high-end with the FDA, former FDA and current pharma, who have entertained maybe grabbing this, but they understand that doing so, what that will mean for everybody. So I don't know. I don't know. And maybe it'll end up being, for the first time ever, it'll actually come to market. Maybe it's important. I just wish I could tell you. I don't know. I wouldn't be surprised by anything. So.
Yeah. Well, I guess, we can just hope for the best here with, not only this, the cancer treatment, Brzezinski's, the Laetril, the stem cells, and, in particular, the fetal stem cells, which are probably the most powerful of all. Hopefully those things can one day kick in and, actually be something regulated or used consistently throughout the United States and, throughout the world. Because right now it looks like a lot of politics, a lot of not necessarily politics per se, but the politics of it all is holding the progress of science and, just medical breakthroughs back tenfold. and keeping us in the dark ages to a lot of this stuff. But Eric, man, it's been an absolute fantastic and totally interesting conversation, man, for the last hour and a half. We could probably continue to go on. I know your time's precious though, man. And we're just kind of wrapping things up. Do you have what's like your last words? Do you have a takeaway you'd like to leave our Elite Man audience, and then also a place that our listeners can check out more about you?
Yeah, sure. As I kind of said, I'd love to see this like come to fruition here at home, and you know, once the clouds part, you know. But I kind of look at it as glass half full. At least we know we live in a crazy world, you know, where money rules all, and that's just a reality, unfortunately. And at least we know we can get on a plane and go to Ukraine or Houston, Texas, to Brzezinski, or the host of other things that are out there. Of course, the issue is being educated and knowing the difference between true and false, and doing your own due diligence, because you're stepping outside of the world of what we're told we're supposed to do. So there's I kind of look at it as a very hopeful thing, honestly. And to watch my work, if you go to my centralized website, is Eric Merola, ericmerola.com. If you sign up to the mailing list there, after you confirm your subscription, you'll automatically get an email that gives you a coupon code to watch The God Sells for free. Yeah, of course, it's on Amazon Prime too, but if you don't have Amazon Prime, and if you just want to follow me anyway, it also has links to all of my work. And you can also go to thegodsells.com, which is the same as stemcellsmovie.com. I don't know. And if you just put my name in the search engine, you'll find it as well. But I recommend doing that. But if you just put my name, Eric Merola, ericmerola, in the search box of Amazon Prime Video, all my work will pop up there as well. So, and yeah, I mean, the God Sells, who knows? I might be back in September or October. If anybody watches it and has a loved one, or they want to do it and they want to let me film them, I'd love to just get in touch with me, and I'll help you with a hotel, the whole thing. I've got the whole thing down to the science. I've been there 6 times now.
Awesome, man. Eric, again, thanks so much for coming on. I really appreciate it, brother. It's been a fascinating conversation. I know our guys are going to absolutely love this one. So take care, and I'll talk to you soon.
Thanks.
All right, guys, I hope you enjoyed that episode. But before you go, there's one last thing I need you to do. I need you to subscribe to this podcast right now if you haven't already. By subscribing to the podcast, you get every single episode the minute they're released. Get all of our Elite Man podcast interviews with all of our incredible world-class guests from the lifestyle, health, fitness, business, and social worlds absolutely free. Subscribe now, guys, if you haven't already, and enjoy all future episodes. And yes, if you do love the podcast, leave us an awesome review. We really do appreciate it.